I don't think anyone should look at Dan Bylsma as a consolation prize in Buffalo. Bylsma is an excellent coach for a young team, and that's exactly what the Buffalo Sabres are going to be. And, you know, as he talked about in his media conference, I mean, there are a number of real good pieces that the Sabres have already under the umbrella of the organization, and obviously they've got one significant piece in Jack Eichel coming in later June.
That's TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger discussing the Buffalo Sabres hire of Dan Bylsma to be their next head coach. We'll talk about that this segment, which is brought to you by Knott Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at knottautocorp.com. Dan Bylsma, sort of one of the worst-kept secrets in hockey, is that he gets the Buffalo Sabres job finally, I guess, after the Sabres miss out on the Mike Babcock sweepstakes. It's a pretty good consolation prize to end up with Dan Bylsma as their head coach.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Bylsma, there was always the chance and the rumor that he was going to join New Jersey with Ray Shiro being named general manager. Apparently, they didn't think it was going to be a good fit. Not sure on what end. It seems like on Dan Bylsma's end. You know, Drew, it seems like the new norm is to sign coaches to longer-term contracts. You didn't used to see that. And I realize Dan Bylsma is an established coach, and he's got the Stanley Cup in 2009 with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but you used to see a coach sign maybe to 2 years, maybe 3 years, if he was an established coach. But now, 5 years for Dan Bylsma after Mike Babcock signs for 8 years in Toronto. And I've always been a big Dan Bylsma fan. I realize that the Pittsburgh Penguins have struggled, and they had to make the change there. And we've talked about it a lot with our friend Mike Colligan. I mean, to me, the hiring of Jim Rutherford and Mike Johnston wasn't the right decision. And quite frankly, it hasn't worked out for them, getting knocked out in the first round, right? And they weren't very good in the regular season either. But back to Dan Bylsma, I think this is a perfect hire for a young team. Luke Richardson was the other option. We talked to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News about that last week.
Luke Richardson being the assistant coach for the Ottawa Senators.
Right, and he was also head coach in the AHL.
At Binghamton Senators,
right?
That's right, yeah.
Yep, and so he was rumored to be kind of the next in line to be the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres after Ted Nolan was let go. But I think with this young team, you need a veteran coach. I don't think this is the time, and Mike Harrington even mentioned that, I don't think it's the time to promote someone who doesn't have that NHL head coaching experience. Dan Bylsma had that experience with Pittsburgh, with a young team, with Crosby, Malkin, and Staal, and all these guys. So I think it's a great hire, and it's nice. It's got to be nice for him getting the 5 year security, right? But make no mistake though, the Sabres went all in on Mike Babcock, quite frankly a little bit disrespectful to say that Dan Bylsma is a consolation prize. No, they went after Babcock. Dan Bylsma knows that. Dan Bylsma interviewed with other teams.
Yeah,
and we talked about it. He had a conversation with Ray Shiro about possibly becoming the Devils' next coach, and he chose to go in a different direction, and good for him. I mean, he's a guy that very highly respected. He was, if you remember, he was a part of that Anaheim Ducks team in 2003 that went to the finals against the New Jersey Devils.
Right.
He was kind of a grinder type of forward, but I think Dan Bylsma is one of those coaches that you hear him being kind of the player's coach.
Well, you know who the director of player personnel for the Anaheim Ducks was back when Dan Bylsma was finishing up his career. Was Tim Murray.
That's a good
his
point.
General manager in Buffalo now. So the two of them certainly do have a familiarity in that Bylsma was a fourth line player for a few years when Tim Murray was still in Anaheim. Of course, and Mike Babcock was in Anaheim during that same time period as well. So there is sort of a connection between everybody here in this lover's triangle, if you will. But Dan Bylsma coming in, here's the quote from him during the during the press conference where he was introduced, quote, "The expectation for the winning culture and how we play is not going to change," Bylsma said. "That's going to starting today. It's going to continue as we go, as we develop this group. I don't think there's a time frame that you're going to put on certain aspects of success of where this team's going to be. I know right now in our process of development as a team, we're looking to get better every day we step on the ice. And they're only going to get better when they step onto the ice with guys like Jack Eichel, with guys like Sam Reinhart, Nikita Zadorov, Rasmus Ristolainen, the Sabres who were awful last year. The future is tremendously bright going forward, so you can see why this is an appealing job for Dan Bylsma.
you know, it's bright, Drew, but Dan Bielsma has a lot of work to do. The Buffalo Sabres, you know, they of course tanked this past year, and you mentioned Jack Eichel, and you know he's going to go second overall, but you know you've got the expectations now for Jack Eichel in his rookie year. You've got Evander Kane who hasn't played yet for the Buffalo Sabres.
Forgot to mention Evander Kane.
Exactly. Where does he fit in? Cody Hodgson was just awful last year. There were only a couple players that really showed up. I mean, Tyler Ennis was one of the players that showed up for the Buffalo Sabres. Matt Molson was terrible this year. Brian Gionta, I mean, he's towards the end of his career, you know, and he's providing that leadership role. But Mikhail Grigorenko has been up and down, you know, in the NHL, out of the NHL. You know, you had this team is a complete mess right now. And Dan Bielsma, when he moved in, I think it's interesting because when he moved in to the Pittsburgh Penguins head coaching position, the Penguins the previous year, if you remember, had just gone to the Stanley Cup Finals with Therrien.
Sure.
Right? And then Bielsma comes in. And, you know, he wins the Stanley Cup in his first head coaching position, or first year coaching. And now he's in a completely different situation. This Buffalo Sabres team, I mean, I don't think there's any chance they make the playoffs this year.
Jack Eichel's a good player.
But, I mean, the Edmonton Oilers have a lot more promising players there. I mean, there's a lot of work to do. I mean, through another guy to throw in that's been very solid is Zemgus Girgensons. Oh, this player I really like.
Tyler Ennis looked terrific.
Yeah, I mentioned Ennis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some good players here, but, you know, you mentioned, you know, Ristolainen and
that's
Zadorov.
That's why he's got a five-year contract. There's no expectation that they're going to be a playoff team next season.
I'm just saying, I mean, like, there's not only this year, but in the next 2-3 years, I mean, this team is, he's an established name. Dan Bielsma is a very good NHL head coach. And you know that, you know, Ted Nolan was a sitting duck really there this year. And I'm just saying, I think that the situation he's going into right now, I mean, he doesn't have Taylor Hall. He doesn't have Jordan Eberle. He doesn't have Ryan Nugent.
I think he's got more talent than more talent that's ready to contribute pretty quickly than you're giving him credit for. Now, look, the Sabres aren't going to be a playoff team, but it would not surprise me that if they go out and if they got a really good goaltender, and I don't think they're necessarily going to get a really good goaltender.
They traded all their goaltenders.
I know. They don't have a goal. I mean, they don't actually have a goaltender, I think, on their roster at this point in time. Or Lindback and Chad Johnson, both of whom aren't NHL caliber goaltenders.
Matt Hackett, too.
Yeah, Matt Hackett, who they acquired from the Minnesota Wild a few years ago in exchange for Jason Pominville. Was he in the Pominville trade?
I think he was.
Yeah. I think
you know
he
what?
Was.
Yeah, sure.
We'll
Why
go
not?
With it. Why not? Sure. Call us out if we're wrong on it. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. But you know, if they were to get a good goaltender, then I think that they're going to be a much more competitive team next year. They're not going to be a Stanley Cup playoff team, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're competing for a playoff spot into the last few weeks of the season.
Yeah, you know, we got to throw in. I don't think we mentioned Sam Reinhardt either.
I mentioned him just sort of in
passing.
But
I mean, he's obviously, you know, got a few years before he's going to be an everyday NHLer or a contributing NHLer. He's going to get a chance next year. But no, you're right, Drew. I mean, we saw that happen with the Calgary Flames going out and getting Jonas Hiller.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't go out and get Hiller, they don't make the playoffs this year. I think we'd all agree with that.
I would agree with that.
And, you know, they got some good goaltending from Kari Ramo as well and Ortio. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Anders Lindback at this point in his career is an NHL backup.
If that.
And so they got to address that and, you know, they make a trade. And they've got a lot of young players that they could move. You know, we already saw them move some young players to the Jets in the Kane trade.
Well, and they got Bogosian too. I mean, so you know, Bogosian's going to be on the back end, and he's going to play huge minutes for the Sabres as well.
He's a wily veteran on that team.
On that team,
a young team.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Georges is still back there, but I mean, he's slowed down a little bit. But Bogosian and Ristolainen are, you know, you're building around Zadorov. Those are three decent young defensemen to build around. And
I think they rushed them a little bit.
They definitely did. They mishandled them.
Yeah.
They did mishandle them. There's no doubt about that. They mishandled Girgensons.
Not Girgensons. Grigorenko.
Grigorenko. Yeah. Mikhail Grigorenko.
Girgensons was in the All-Star game.
That's right. Pardon me. They mishandled Grigorenko when they let him play and then they sent him back. Sort of like the Oilers did, you know, where they screwed themselves almostly to some degree in how they handled their players. The future is certainly bright for the Buffalo Sabres, and Dan Bielsma is probably a pretty good coach in order to get them focused on how what it takes to be an everyday NHL professional and putting this team on the right track. Because, I mean, I like the Buffalo fan base. They're a passionate group. They know what's going on there. And it's good to see that they're now done with their atrocious tanking that we saw from last season.
Yeah, and they've got the draft there next year.
Yeah.
There's a lot going for Buffalo right now. And I mean, you know, everyone in Winnipeg is kind of, you've mentioned Evander Kane, and, you know, everybody starts laughing and rolling their eyes. But, I mean, he is a huge piece of that puzzle, Drew.
Put him next to Jack Eichel. See what he can do.
If Evander Kane gets his, you know, his game back and gets back to that 30-goal form, or maybe even gets to that 40-goal form,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, the Sabres could be back in the playoffs in a couple years.
Yeah. I also don't really care about, you know, this. Forgetting, I don't even want to talk about. There still seems to be some hatred and some dislike for Evander Kane in Winnipeg. Get over yourselves. Focus on the team you have. Well, who cares what he's?
I mean,
he's yesterday's news at this point.
It was a tough year. Again, I mean, we wish Evander Kane the best. I mean, at this point,
who cares?
He obviously has to get some things sorted out in his personal life, and he had some issues here in Winnipeg. And, you know, there's no reason to believe that he won't thrive there. In Buffalo, and you hope for the best for him. That's all we can say, right?
I just don't care about it. I mean, frankly, he's not in Winnipeg anymore, so why do I care about a guy who plays on a random team that you're going to play against twice a year? For me, move on, focus about something else, focus about the team you got in front of you. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the St. Louis Blues and their coaching situation. Ken Hitchcock signs a one-year contract extension to remain behind the bench in St. Louis. We'll talk about it next. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
This has been a process of reflection, of focus on what went right and what needs to change. And we're now in the process of getting ourselves mentally and physically prepared to get the players into the right frame of mind so we can begin building our team again. So this is unfinished business for me. I don't want a coach to coach. I want to coach to win, and I couldn't find a better spot than to show up right here and coach this hockey club.
That's current and still St. Louis Blues head coach Ken Hitchcock. He signs a one-year contract extension to remain behind the bench of the St. Louis Blues. We'll talk about that this segment, which is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been bringing Winnipeg the best in sporting goods and equipment. It's the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, and the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. Want to make note as well that our good friend Shane Knighty is going to be live on location at Royal Sports from noon to 3 today. So be sure to check him out on Pembina Highway. And, you know, they've got a big tent sale going on there, so you can check them out, Royal Sports, and go say hi to Shane Knighty as well this afternoon. Ken Hitchcock back behind the bench of the St. Louis Blues for another year, a one-year contract extension. Seems like it's a bad idea to my mind, in that the Blues continue to flame out in the playoffs. They're great regular season players, but yet again, they can't get over the hump in the first round, losing to the Minnesota Wild relatively handily, I must say. You know, in six games, they lose to the Wild, and at no point in that series did you really think that the Blues had control of the series by any stretch. And they go back and they re-sign Ken Hitchcock, and I don't really see why next season's going to be any different than this season unless they make dramatic changes to their roster and bring in a whole new group of players.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, Ken Hitchcock, you know, we heard that he might not be coming back at all, and that St. Louis might actually be going after Mike Babcock. And, you know, we talked about Dan Bylsma last segment, gets the 5-year deal, Babcock gets the 8-year deal, mm-hmm. and then you have Ken Hitchcock getting a 1-year contract, which is very strange to me. And I agree with you, Drew, in the sense that the St. Louis Blues this year was completely disappointing. Yeah. St. Louis Blues, during the regular season, they're right up there at the top of the Western Conference. And again, I mean, you have a disappointment. And, you know, that goes partly to Jake Allen wasn't good in the playoffs for the St. Louis Blues, struggled mm-hmm. big time.
904 save percentage in the playoffs in the first round.
There you go.
Yeah.
And he didn't play well. And, you know, the St. Louis Blues' big guns weren't very good either. And you know, Tarasenko had a good series. Tarasenko had a great regular season. He had a breakout season. He's an elite scorer now. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned, you know, there has to be dramatic changes. I agree with you. And I think this team, the problem to me with the St. Louis Blues, and we know that Ken Hitchcock likes the more of a defensive style, and he's very structured. That's a part of his game. But you look at the teams that are having success now in the playoffs, the Lightning, the Blackhawks, the Ducks, they play a lot quicker than the St. Louis Blues. The St. Louis Blues team, they're kind of like an LA Kings and Anaheim Ducks, and that they like to, you know, the dump and chase cycle game and all of that.
Physical.
The physical brand of hockey. But when that's not working, I mean, this team, at times they look out of place, and they lack that kind of extra gear that you need in the playoffs. And that's happened now, Drew, for much of Ken Hitchcock's tenure in St. Louis. I mean, he hasn't won a Stanley Cup yet. I mean, I love Ken Hitchcock. I think Ken Hitchcock is a top three NHL coach.
He hasn't won one in St. Louis.
Yeah,
saying.
Of course
he won one in Dallas years ago. Yeah,
but this team hasn't taken the next step. And you asked, you know, why should we think that anything's going to change? Well, you know, Alex Pietrangelo, Kevin Shattenkirk, Jay Bouwmeester, they brought in Mahalik. You know, it's a good group of defensemen here. I know Mahalik isn't maybe as good as he used to be, but when you're talking about Pietrangelo and Shattenkirk, I mean, they can move the puck. You know, they've got size. Jackman, you know, he's getting a little bit older, but they've got, you know, some physicality there on the back end, and they've got a lot of talented forwards. Jaden Schwartz was excellent this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear that a guy like TJ Oshie might be moved out and doesn't really fit into their plans. I think TJ Oshie is a great player, former UND guy. But something has to give here. And, you know, they brought in a guy like Jori Lehterä, and, you know, he was at times disappointing. Played with Tarasenko at times, and then he was moved off that line. And, you know, Alex Steen, still a very good player. I mean, there's so much talent there. They're missing, you know, again, the question gets back to, you know, David Backes, can he lead this team like Ryan Getzlaff or Jonathan Toews has led their teams? And you know, quite frankly, he hasn't got the job done.
There's no denying that the success that the Blues and Hitchcock have had in the regular season. I mean, under the Blues, Ken Hitchcock's regular season record is 175, 79, and 27. Tremendous regular season record, probably puts them definitely top three in the NHL, I would suspect, in the last number of years. But it really seems like the Blues are a team that's built for the regular season, but not for the playoffs, which is, you know, it's borne that out in the results they've had recently, where they just can't get anything going in the playoffs, because I don't know if the game is a step faster in the playoffs. I think it probably is. And they just don't seem to be able to keep up with their opposition when, you know, the games really matter the most.
What team does that remind you of? To me, it reminds me of the San Jose Sharks.
Exact parallels.
And
tons of talent, no playoff success.
And you have to wonder, not just because Hitchcock signs the one-year deal, but because where they are, you're talking about St. Louis Blues teams that's got a lot of good, young, talented players. And, you know, they've got some prospects, you know, a guy like Ty Ratty, he might get a chance next year. But when you talk about Pietrangelo and Shattenkirk, I mean, the window for this team to be an elite team, it's not closing. I mean, there's a lot of talented players there. But you got to, and to me, what was the most surprising is that, you know, we're talking about the UFA crop for this year. I mean, Paul Stastny was one of the biggest signings of the 2014 UFA class, and he had a pretty good regular season. But in the playoffs, I mean, these guys didn't elevate their games. They weren't at that level that they needed to be in. Well, and it's perplexing because, you know, we went over all the names, Oshie, and, you know, we just mentioned Stastny and Backes and Tarasenko. I mean, it's a deep team.
Sure.
At every position except goal. I mean, that really hurt them this year. I mean, when you put a rookie goalie in there, and we weren't sure who was going to start Elliott. I know Richie and I argued about that before the playoffs started, and they ended up going with Jake Allen. Both of those guys weren't particularly good in the regular season, and you can't when you're a team that's looking to go deep into the playoffs and you haven't gone to the Western Conference Final because teams like LA and Chicago are there year after year, you can't have a goalie shaky like that. And I'm not picking on Jake Allen here. I think Jake Allen's got a bright future. I'm just saying that, you know, that really hurt them in the first round.
Ken Hitchcock was asked about the goaltending on CBS Sports 920 radio in St. Louis. I believe our buddy Jeremy Rutherford has a show on that station. This is what Ken Hitchcock had to say about the St. Louis Blues goaltending. Quote, "I think the goaltending is the least of our problems. I get the fact there were three goals that went in that were ugly. That's the growth of a young player. We got two guys, he's speaking about Allen and Elliott, who are more than capable of carrying the load here. I think goaltending is going to be our strength moving forward. We've got a young guy emerging and a veteran guy who's on top of his game right now and playing the best of his career. Selfishly, that was one of the things I looked at coming back. I don't think you can win without really good goaltending. I think we've got two guys that challenge each other. I'm comfortable. I feel like Jake Allen is really, really going to grow from there, and I like where both guys are at. He might be right. Jake Allen might blossom into a top NHL goaltender. I mean, he had a decent regular season, and Brian Elliott has had many decent NHL regular seasons. But this team isn't... You know, their disappointment isn't in the regular season. It's in the playoffs where they can't get the critical save when they need it. Goaltending is pretty poor for them for the last number of years. I'm trying to think going back to when they, you know, had a really good goaltender in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, they went out and they got Ryan Miller last year.
He was a bust.
That didn't work.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you look at Tampa Bay right now, Ben Bishop, he might not be the quote-unquote elite goalie, but... You know that if he has a bad game, he's going to bounce back. And we saw two shutouts against the New York Rangers. To me, that's something that Doug Armstrong's got to address. I think you can't go into next year with these two goalies.
It sounds like they're going to, though. I mean, it sounds like they're, you know, if you read Hitchcock's comments there, it doesn't seem like goaltending is going to be the area of concern that they have. I don't disagree with you that it should be. Here's more from Hitchcock. This is about the pace at which the St. Louis Blues play, which goes to what we were talking about their speed problems. For me, it's not a new style that we need to play. It's more pace. How do we get more pace in our game? How do we become more of a threat off the rush? How do we become more of a threat on transitions, on counters? How do we make people pay for their mistakes so that we're not just stuck in half court mode,
right?
Using a sort of a basketball reference. Yep. There, I agree with that comment again of his, but the problem is, unless you change the players, these guys aren't going to be able to play with more pace. I don't think they are what they are. They're a team that grinds you out down low in deep. That works during the regular season, but it doesn't seem to work when you play in a 7-game series or a best of 7 against a team that is familiar with your play.
Right. They don't have a game that's right now currently constructed, and that changes, though, if you get the goaltending. And, you know, when you talk about players like Tarasenko and Jaden Schwartz, I mean, and others, these guys can score off the rush. I mean, these guys are fast players. I think it's the rest of the team and the type of style that doesn't work for them in the playoffs. And, you know, you're going to see some moves. I mean, this team has to make some moves. The team, as they're currently constructed, it's a good team, but it's, I think, a step below you know, the teams like the Anaheim Ducks and the LA Kings. And I know the LA Kings didn't make the playoffs this year, but still, I think the way this team is constructed, you're going to probably see a player or two move, and, you know, you might see some other players get a chance next year. But it's going to be, you know, you mentioned it's not going to change dramatically, I don't think. But, you know, back to the 1-year signing, it's odd that he didn't at least get a 2-year deal to me. I mean, the 1-year deal is kind of like, okay, we're going to give you 1 year, and if you don't get it done this year, then we're going to find someone else.
Absolutely. Before we head to break, a reminder that this segment was brought to you by Royal Sports, the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, and the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. This weekend at Royal Sports, it's the 2015 Goalie Equipment Show and Sale. Come meet the representatives, check out the new gear, and pretty much everything will be on sale at Royal Sports, 750 Pembina Highway. Also, at 650 Raleigh in EK, Shane Knighty will be there from noon to 3, so go there and check it out. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mark Seidel of North American Central Scouting discussing the upcoming NHL draft. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the chief scout for the North American Central Scouting Agency, discussing the 2015 NHL Draft. Mark Seidel, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's good to join you, and I appreciate it.
Mark obviously brought you on to discuss the 2015 draft upcoming in Miami in about a little less than a month's time. Now we'll be down there, of course. Ezra and Dave of IllegalCurve.com will be down there covering it for TSN 1290.
I just have to get a pair of sandals.
As he just asked, nobody wants to see your feet in sandals, Ezzy. Let me assure you of that. Mark, there's no question Connor McDavid's going first overall to the Oilers. You know, based on your scouting, based on everything you've seen about McDavid, is it possible that he might be better than Sidney Crosby?
It's a good question, and it's one certainly we get asked a lot, and I'm real hesitant to answer it, honestly, but because I'm talking to you guys as well. He does have a chance to be better than Sidney Crosby. He really does. He's an electric player. He's the best player I've seen since Sidney, and certainly Sidney obviously has had a phenomenal career. And the thing about Connor McDavid is his skating is he's as quick for the 12 to 15 feet to a loose puck as I've ever seen anybody. And you combine that quickness with an IQ through the roof, just like Sidney does. They both see the game incredibly well. But that skating ability is something that I think and might be able to set him apart a little bit now. You know, we're projecting down the road, and as I said, Sidney's obviously had a phenomenal career. But this kid is real special, and he's not as strong as Crosby is through the core and fighting off checks as much. Now, he's only 17, 18 years old as well, so that'll come with age. But he's got a chance to be as good as Crosby, if not better, for sure.
Mark, Jack Eichel, and we were talking about the Buffalo Sabres just hired Dan Bylsma, and everybody's already penciled him in at number two. What do you think he projects as an NHLer? I know everybody thinks that he's also a generational player, and do you think there's any chance he doesn't play a full season with Buffalo next year?
No, I can't see it. I can't see what they're doing there. Now, they're trying to be patient. They understand that this is going to be a long process. They've got some prospects in their system, but I'd be shocked if Jack Eichel doesn't play a full year in Buffalo. I think he is 1A, certainly. I think there's a notch between him and McDavid for sure. But this kid, he's a very, very special player, and I think that Dan Bylsma is going to get him in. Tim Murray is going to get him in there and realize that this is a kid they're going to build a franchise around, and I don't see any way he doesn't play the whole season in Buffalo and have a great year at the same time. I mean, he's a dynamic player. He's a lot of the same things as McDavid. He's a little bit bigger. He's obviously not quite as quick as McDavid, but a real special player that I think that team will build around and for the next decade or so.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Mark Seidel, the chief scout for the North American Central Scouting Agency. Mark, obviously the 1-2 are clear with McDavid and Eichel. It's right after that, there's sort of some discrepancy. You know, different rankers have different players. You have Noah Hanifin, the defenseman, third overall in your most recent rankings, but some lists have him falling down a little bit. What is his ceiling as an NHLer, and what current NHL defenseman would you compare Noah Hanifin to?
Well, you're right. There's become a little bit of a mixed divide in the scouting community on Noah Hanifin. I happen to be a big fan, and our guys are big fans of him. I think that when you can skate as well as he can, you can create some offense and you can join the rush. I think he really has a chance to be an impact defenseman and potentially a franchise defenseman. I'll give you a guy that's not in the NHL, but Scott Niedermayer, who he reminds me of. And again, you know, you got to be hesitant when you say that. This is a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest defensemen ever to play the game, but he plays that same similar style. He gets up the ice so well. Uses his feet exceptionally well, can make a pass, can make a play. So that's kind of the guy that I, you know, if he tops out of the ceiling, that's who he could be like. So, you know, I think that Arizona at 3 is going to have an interesting decision for sure, because now they've got to decide, do they take a guy who could be a franchise defenseman, or do they look at a couple other centermen down the road? So we'll have to see what they do. But Noah Hanifin, I think, is certainly a very special defenseman.
Now, Mark, we've got one other player to ask you about that's one of the top-ranked players. Then we want to get into some other players that are kind of ranked in the middle of the pack in the first round, because the Jets, of course, pick 17th overall. You've got Dylan Strome, 4th overall, and most lists have him in the top 5 or 6. I know some lists have Mitch Marner going to him, but if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs picking 4th overall, are you taking Dylan Strome?
You know what? I'm probably not, guys. I'm really not. I love Dylan Strome. I think he's a guy, I compare him to Ron Francis. Doesn't get up the ice real well, doesn't skate exceptionally well, but IQ through the roof, good kid, works hard, all the things you want. I mean, just doesn't skate exceptionally well, and I think the Leafs are trying to build a skilled, fast team in Toronto. I would probably, if I was them, I would take Mitch Marner. When we bring and send out our final rankings for the draft, Mitch Marner will be at 4. He's a guy who he's not as sure of being a star as Stromer's as sure of being a good player, but he's got superstar potential. So the ceiling is higher for Mitch Marner, and I think if you're in Toronto, they've got to kind of take a shot here and see if they can get a guy who could potentially be a franchise guy. Mitch Marner's a guy who's got a little bit of Patrick Kane, a little bit of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in him. So two obviously pretty good players, and I think that's who the Leafs would take, and that's who I think they'll end up taking.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Mark Seidel, Chief Scout for North American Central Scouting. We're discussing the 2015 NHL Draft, which, of course, comes up in about a little less than a month from now in Miami, Florida, where TSN 1290, of course, will be live on location. Mark, we wanted to switch down, as he mentioned, to a little bit lower in the first round. The Jets draft 17th and 25th overall in the first round. One player we wanted to ask you about is Paul Bittner, forward of the Portland Winterhawks. You have him 13th on your list. NHL Central Scouting has him 26th overall in their final rankings. Why are you so high on Paul Bittner of the Portland Winterhawks?
You know what? I think Paul Bittner's a guy, you're right, certainly. We like him probably more than almost anybody, with the exception of maybe his parents. this is a kid who's a big power forward, skates exceptionally well, and you just watch the Rangers play and Chris Kreider, and you saw the impact at times he could have on a game. And I think down the road, that's the kind of effect Paul Bittner can have. When you're a big guy like that, he can go into the dirty areas, but he can get up the ice so quickly. He can get in on the forecheck. He can do a lot of things that you want at that size. It's pretty impressive. So, you know, I think, as I said, we've got him higher than most, but I think he's one of those guys that we're going to look back in 4 or 5 years and go, man, how did, you know, he might slip. Don't be shocked if he's still there when Winnipeg picks their second one. Wouldn't shock me at all. Would obviously, in my opinion, be a phenomenal pick at that spot. But I think when you're that big and can skate that well in today's NHL, that's a pretty impressive package.
Mark, and we have, you know, some more prospects to ask you about. And obviously, we're just trying to find the guy that the Jets are going to pick, because you correctly picked Nikolaj Ehlers last year going to the Jets, if you remember correctly.
I do remember that. Broken clock is the right place it is.
Another guy we wanted to ask you about is Nick Merkley, who had a hat trick against the Brandon Wheat Kings for the Kelowna Rockets in the WHL final. You've got Nick Merkley ranked 14th on your list, and NHL Central Scouting had him a little bit lower at 23. Why are you, I guess, more enthusiastic about his game, and has his play in the WHL playoffs and the Memorial Cup, you think that's going to just raise his draft stock even more?
Absolutely. I think certainly Nick has had some injury issues over his career, and I think that's, you know, from an evaluation standpoint, it's hard. Obviously, the kid isn't on the ice, or sometimes if you see him and he's injured, you can't get a full indication of how he can play. But I really think in the playoffs and the Memorial Cup, we've seen the Nick Merkley that we believe he can beat. I think he's a real impactful guy, smart, good hockey IQ, creates some offense, does a lot of things. And, you know, I was thinking heading into the interview, I was thinking, obviously, you're going to ask me who Winnipeg's going to take. And with their first pick, he'd be a guy that I could see them taking. You know, it's no secret I'm a big fan of what the Jets have done with the draft over the past 5 or 6 years. They grade them every year, and you see the beginning of an A every year. You know, I think they do a great job. And I think if they were to get Nick Merkley with that first pick, I think they'd get a guy that is going to take a couple of years, certainly have to get some strength to him and get a little bit bigger and stronger. But really, in the last month, has really elevated his draft stock.
Mark Seidel is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Chief Scout for North American Central Scouting. We're discussing the 2015 NHL Draft. And Mark, you have Jake DeBrusk. He's the son of former Edmonton Oilers player Louis DeBrusk of the Swift Current Broncos. You have him ranked 17th on your list. What about his game? He's a forward. He's a left wing for Swift Current. What about his game jumps out to you as being, you know, the best attribute that he brings to the table?
Well, you know what? He's a very different player than his father. Obviously, Louis was an unbelievably tough guy. Jake isn't afraid. He certainly goes in dirty areas, finishes checks, and does a lot of things. But he's not going to come in and fight. And the casual fan might think, geez, we're drafting Louis DeBrusk, we're getting a fighter. I mean, that's not what you're getting. You're getting another guy. And the Western League has been blessed this year with him in the draft eligibles in terms of guys with high hockey IQ. Now, he grew up around the game. You can tell when you watch him play, understands what would be on the ice. Certainly, Louis has been able to you know, translate to him what he has to do on the ice to be successful, and does a lot of everything real well. Isn't exceptional in any area, but real character guy that plays hard, does all those things right, and he's one of those guys that in a few years the coach is going to love him as a player. He may be able to play in your third line, maybe he'll play in your second line at some point in time, depending on how his offense progresses, but the coach is going to feel comfortable putting him out there at any situation, and I think that's pretty appealing to a team when you're picking in the teams near the 20 spot.
You know, Mark, you mentioned that you like what the Winnipeg Jets have done in previous drafts, and everybody likes to look at those previous drafts and make those connections. And one of those players that you know, certainly fans are looking at is Timo Meier on the Halifax Mooseheads, who's played with Nikolai Ehlers in the QMJHL there, and he had 44 goals and 90 points. You had him ranked a little bit lower. Why was that?
You know what, I just, a little bit about Timo, when I've seen personal viewings, that guy on the East Coast loves him, raved to me all year, and it's one of the, when you're doing rankings, sometimes you've got to, somebody has to make the final call, and when I saw him, I wasn't overly impressed at times with him. I thought he didn't get enough done on the ice. Now, I saw him at the Prospects game in St. Catharines, and I thought he was real good. He had a great game at that point in time. And certainly some of the chemistry that he's had with Nikolai would be pretty appealing, but I think he's a player. I think he, it's just hard when you only see a guy five or six times as I have this year, and see him, he doesn't play really well. It's hard to justify putting him into the high teens. As I say, our East Coast guy loves him and keeps arguing with me that we've got to have him up in the 17 to 20 range. We'll see. We'll see exactly where it ends up with our final rankings, but certainly had a good year out there as a goal scorer, has that ability to finish, and as I said, had the chemistry with Nikolai all year, so I think that's going to work out well.
Now, Mark, this year, when you look at the success of some smaller forwards, so whether it's Tyler Johnson on Tampa, of course undrafted, or if it's Johnny Gaudreau, second-round pick for the Calgary Flames, do you think there's less hesitancy for teams now when they see the success some of these players have had to draft these guys? So, you know, we talked about Nick Merkley, you know, Mitch Marner's a smaller forward, and, you know, you're talking
Nikolai Ehlers.
Nikolai Ehlers, for example, yeah. Or you're talking about a guy like Travis Konecny, you know, he's 5'9". Do you think NHL teams are kind of not maybe using that as a knock against guys if they're not necessarily 6'1 or 6'2?
Well, the NHL is a lot like the other sports leagues, and it's a copycat league. And you look at what Tampa's done with the triplets, and you know, the league really is run and scouted by former players and guys who've been around a long time. So that mindset takes a while to change, but you could only be human and watch what those triplets are doing and what some of the guys, like you said, Johnny Gaudreau, are doing to not say, you know what, we need to look at it again. And I think the trend is going that way. You look at how fast the game is, and it's certainly not as physical. You can't hold and hook the way you used to with the obstruction calls. So I think those guys are being given better opportunities than they ever have. Now, it's still a very difficult game. You look at some of the, you know, you look at the Memorial Cup and you look at Oshawa. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Kelowna does against them with their big, long defense and huge upsize up front. So, you know, everybody's going to defer at the end of the day to size if they have to. But when you get special players, and you mentioned some of them, that I think, you know, I think NHL teams are more willing to say, let's take a shot at it. American kid Jeremy Brackle, who's a favorite of mine, is going to fall into that category as well. I mean, some guys are saying he's going to be a second or third round pick. I think he's probably around the 20 spot. I think he's phenomenally skilled, but he's 5'9", 5'10". So you're right. We'll see how it goes, but I really think the trend is getting into that stage. It's just slow to develop.
Mark, we'll let you go on one final player. He's familiar to fans here in Manitoba, given that he plays his junior hockey for the Brandon Wheat Kings. That's defenseman Ivan Provorov. He's sort of been in some rankings, Craig Button, namely, he's gone up to be a top five pick. You have him down at 18th overall in your latest rankings. You know, how do you project Ivan Provorov, and what are you saying, you know, the pros and the cons, let's say, of his game?
Yeah, we've talked about a bunch of guys that I love. Ivan Provorov goes a little bit in the other category, and it's not that I hate him. It's just that I'm not as sold on him as everybody else is. I certainly saw Craig's list the other day come out, and he had him at 5. You know, again, it's opinion. Craig's been in a long time. I have respect for him. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to disagree on that one. Now, Ivan Provorov is a pretty skilled guy. Certainly can make some plays offensively. I think he's very, very dynamic. Defensively, I think at times he somehow cheats a little bit. Gets caught out of position at times. And then some of that will come as he develops, certainly. As he gets older with some coaching, he'll continue to get better at that. He's a guy that, you know, I equated a little bit like Roman Josi. Good NHL defenseman, very good NHL defenseman, but if I'm picking in at 5-6 spots, I'm not sure I'd take the Provorov kid. I think when we get our final rankings done, he's going to end up around the 10 or 11 mark overall, which, again, is a pretty high spot, but he's just not, I don't think he's a franchise defenseman. If you're going to take a guy at 5 or 6, I think he better be a franchise defenseman.
We look forward to seeing those final rankings ahead of the 2015 NHL draft that will take place in Miami in a little less than a month from now. Mark Seidel, Chief Scout, North American Central Scouting Agency. We appreciate your time this morning, and thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, thanks for having me, boys. Anytime you ever need any help, by all means, let me know, and keep up the great work. I enjoy the show.
Appreciate that, Mark. Thanks very much. Have yourself a great morning. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Whoa.
I think if you enter the San Jose Sharks organization like I am as a head coach, the expectation is to win right now, regardless of the ages or the birth certificates of the players. There's a tradition here of winning and of challenging to go deep into the playoffs, and that's my expectation. I think that's Doug's expectation, and I don't think anyone's looking for anything less than that here. I see a group of veteran guys and young players that have hit a little bit of a rut here, and I think their true character is going to be tested, and I see enough character in that room that I see a big bounce back here.
That is new San Jose Sharks head coach Pete DeBoer addressing the media in San Jose, where he was recently named. Earlier this week, he was named as the new head coach of the San Jose Sharks, replacing Todd McClellan, who, of course, was he officially fired? Did they consciously uncouple? Did they split? Did they mutually agree to depart? I don't know what word they ended up using. But anyways, Todd McClellan, of course, no longer the head coach in San Jose. Pete DeBoer, the new head coach, now tasked with finally trying to make an woefully underachieving San Jose Sharks team something more impressive. Your thoughts, Ezzy, on Pete DeBoer? He came from, most recently with New Jersey, where he lost his job before that with the Florida Panthers. Is this the right coach for the San Jose Sharks? Is this the guy that's going to change the culture and take a talented team and finally get them over that hump to make them a playoff threat?
I think it's a really good question, Drew. And right now, with the way the San Jose Sharks are constructed, still with Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton leading this team, I think those are the guys that have the answer. And as far as where this team is going in the next couple of years, as far as Pete DeBoer, getting hired by the San Jose Sharks, I thought that he didn't get the best deal in New Jersey, the way he was fired after 36 games. I realized the Devils weren't going anywhere last year. But, this team was, it wasn't a very good team. And I thought Lou Lamoriello didn't do enough to address his lack of quality defensemen. And this Devils team, Corey Schneider had a good year. But after that, Adam Larson got better after Peter DeBoer. And I realized that he didn't have a lot of confidence in Adam Larson. He was drafted fourth overall in 2011. But, back to San Jose. DeBoer, he's a guy that's had a lot of success at the OHL level, and he took the New Jersey Devils to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2012. And then, everything fell apart. Kovalchuk leaves. They lose Parise. Mm-hmm. Pete DeBoer, he's still a guy that's very highly regarded as a coach in the NHL, and he was interviewing with other teams as well. I think it's a good hire for the San Jose Sharks. I've always liked Peter DeBoer as a coach. I think he seems to be a coach who has the confidence to make decisions. He's not, like I said, he wasn't afraid to not play Adam Larson in New Jersey. But this San Jose Sharks team, their window for winning, if it hasn't already closed, it's closing quickly. And there's a lot of good, talented young players there with Matt Nieto and Thomas Hertl. But to me, his number one job is to get the most out of Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau. Because I think it's pretty clear that Todd McClellan, they weren't listening to him anymore.
No, certainly time was up when it came to the Todd McClellan era in San Jose. I'm not certain that Pete DeBoer is going to be the guy who's going to be able to get through to Joe Thornton and make him a winner.
They have to trade those guys. Enough already.
They have no trade contracts. It's curious to hear it's a new general at the ship, but it's the same players or the same crew on the ship. And so it's sort of hard to believe that Pete DeBoer, who by all accounts is a pretty decent NHL head coach, but is he going to be able to get through to Joe Thornton after so many years of Thornton being who he is? Joe Thornton's been around this league for so long now that to expect him to be much different is sort of fool's gold. And I don't know that DeBoer is the right guy to go into that dressing room. We know that there's a leadership void in that room. At least, we assume there is based on the results and based on everything else and based on all the chatter and based on all the back and forth between the general manager and the players. There seems to be a void in leadership. I'm not sure that DeBoer is the guy to, bridge the gap and be the right guy to necessarily shake the San Jose Sharks out of their doldrums. Because, like you said, that is a talented team. But unless they do something with the player personnel, it's hard to believe that this is a team that's going to be much different from the team we've seen the last couple of years, either a fringe playoff team that ends up underachieving or that we saw this year, a team that didn't even make the playoffs.
Right. And, you know, Peter DeBoer is known for, you know, promoting offense, and he likes an aggressive forecheck and all that. The San Jose Sharks team last year was something missing on this team. And, you know, you talk about Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, who have a couple of years left on their contracts. This team, they need to get the most out of their skilled players.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't doing that last year. And, you know, it's a team that definitely, you're right, Drew, they need to go out and they need to get better. They need to add some veterans because this was a team at times. You know, they traded for Brendan Dillon, and Mark Edward Vlasic is still an excellent defenseman. And
he's RFA this year.
Yeah, he is. And to me, there's also an issue in net.
Well, Alex Stalock is their only goalie on the roster. Antti Niemi is a UFA.
I don't think he's coming back next year.
I don't know how you bring Antti Niemi back. You know, Stalock, I guess, is fine as your backup goaltender. I don't really have a tremendous problem with that. But you're right. This is a team that hasn't ever had really good goaltending. I mean, Niemi's had flashes, but when it came to the playoffs, sort of like the St. Louis Blues, he was always pretty lousy for San Jose in goal in the playoffs when it mattered. Obviously, he had a success with Chicago before he was traded to San Jose. But, you know, it's a team that has some holes and that needs to address some of their roster issues, primarily starting with Thornton and Marleau. But both of those guys have no movement clauses, and so if they don't want to go anywhere, they're not going anywhere.
Right, and if you factor in that they have those no-trade clauses, it's all about Pete DeBoer transitioning this team from a team that was led by Thornton and Marleau to a team that's now led by Joe Pavelski and Logan Couture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if that means strategically you give Joe Thornton a little bit less playing time and offensive zone responsibilities, that's what you have to do. But right now, and I mean, Joe Thornton's still an excellent player. I mean, he's still, you know, is going to get his point totals. And
yeah.
He's still a good player. But that's what it's about, transitioning the leadership of this team. And they've already kind of started to do that with taking away the C from Joe Thornton and all that. But, you know, they got to address the goalie issue. And, you know, they got to bring some, I think, another defenseman in. But this team, I still think, you know, if you make the right moves, I still think San Jose can be back in the playoffs next year.
I think they can if they make the right moves. I don't see any evidence that they're going to make any moves, which I think is a bit of a problem. You look at the team, and I'm not sure that hiring Pete DeBoer gets rid of the bad voodoo that sort of was surrounding this team at the end of the season.
Is there any coach that can get rid of that voodoo?
I don't know.
Can Mike Babcock get rid of that voodoo?
I'm not certain that he could, and I think that speaks to the problem that you have guys who you might have a dysfunctional locker room situation there, and you can't do anything about it for another couple of years because both Thornton and Marleau have their no movement clauses.
I think one thing's for sure, and again, you know, Todd McClellan and Pete DeBoer, they'll have their coaching differences.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, having a new face in there is just having a new coach in there is going to make a world of difference. Todd McClellan this year, I mean, it was poisonous.
Yeah.
It was a poisonous environment. And getting a guy who's had some success at the NHL level with New Jersey, you know, he gets a new contract with San Jose. And, you know, I still think this team, you make the right moves and you're back in the playoffs.
I don't think it's a bad move by any stretch. I just don't know that it's the move that does anything significant to change the fortunes of the San Jose Sharks. You know, if they were to make the playoffs, I think they're still probably a first round exit in the playoffs. So I'm not sure that this is the team that propels them any further.
Through because, you know, the makeup of the San Jose Sharks is going to be completely different next year.
Well, we'll see.
I'm not saying Thornton and Marleau. Absolutely. Well, they're going to bring in a goalie.
Yeah.
They're going to make some moves because the team wasn't good enough last year. So they're going to make moves. I mean, they'll definitely be a buyer in the free agent market.
We'll see. But I think I agree with you there that they're going to use some of their cap room. They have about $14 million in cap space, and they'll try and bring in some reinforcements to that dressing room. When we come back, more on the San Jose Sharks hire of Pete DeBoer. Kevin Kurz from CSN Bay Area, he's the Sharks insider. He's going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. 11:30 in the morning here in beautiful Winnipeg, Manitoba. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he is the San Jose Sharks insider for CSN Bay Area, Kevin Kurz. Kevin, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. How you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Kevin?
Not bad, not bad.
That's good. Obviously brought you on to talk about the San Jose Sharks hiring of Pete DeBoer as head coach. You know, from your perspective, was this the right man for the job at this time, given the San Jose Sharks' struggles last season and their inability to make the playoffs and sort of do anything in the playoffs when they were able to get there under Todd McClellan?
Well, I think it shows that they are going to try to get back to the playoffs as soon as possible. And really, that was a question. You know, we've heard for about the last 12 months before this hiring that the Sharks were in a rebuild. They were trying to integrate these younger players onto the roster. Maybe they're going to have to take a step backwards. They did take a step backwards, but I think now they're looking for a guy that can come in and sort of fix this ship. And, you know, maybe it's a guy that can command some respect of the veteran players while at the same time trying to integrate these younger players in. So I think that was my biggest takeaway from the press conference the other day, was that these guys want to get back to the playoffs and they want to get back there next year. They don't really want to go through any sort of long sort of rebuild process.
Kevin, Pete DeBoer's obviously had, you know, the success at the OHL level, and he took the New Jersey Devils to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2012, but now he's in a position where he comes into a bit of a mess, quite frankly, in the sense that, you know, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, there's so much, if you want to call it baggage, or the fact that everybody knows that the team is kind of transitioning their leadership and really their effective players away from them. Did you think that's really his number one goal, is that he has to really make sure that he gets the best out of those two players, Marleau and Thornton?
Yeah. I mean, it is a bit of a mess. That's a good way to put it. There are some issues on this team. There's no question. You know, Thornton had a good year last year, but Marleau, there was a decline in Patrick Marleau, just 19 goals. And so you look at those two right away. Those two are two of the still most recognizable faces. You know, you have Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski in the primes of their careers, Mark Edward Vlasic, same with him. But then you have a whole bunch of younger players that, you know, the jury is still out on these guys as to whether they can be future stars in the league, or some of them if they can even be future everyday players. You know, Thomas Hertl and Matt Nieto are two second-year players that they didn't have the kind of impact that was expected last season. They were very inconsistent. Mirko Mueller, defenseman, I'm still not quite sure why he was here last year. He didn't look like he belonged in the NHL yet. Probably would have been better off playing in juniors. And then, you know, there's a couple other younger players. Barkley Goodrow was a guy that spent most of the year on the team that frankly, he should have been in the minors probably most of the year, too. So it's a project, and it's, you know, you bring up the leadership. That's still an issue here. And, you know, how many NHL teams in history have had two guys in their dressing room that are former captains that have had the C taken off their sweater? It's kind of something it's almost comical. You kind of roll your eyes at it. I mean, how does that happen? I'm not sure that it ever has happened, but that's something that's going to have to be worked out. You know, Joe Pavelski was the guy that really was looked at as the captain. I think he assumed all the public duties that a captain would assume last season. He's probably going to be the guy, but, you know, DeBoer didn't want to commit to anything just yet. He wants to come in, get a lay of the land, talk to these guys, learn a little bit more about these guys. The only one he really knows is Brent Burns from his time in the World Championships. So, he's got a lot of catching up to do in terms of getting to know these players and trying to figure out the dynamic of the room, because it's certainly an issue still. It was an issue last season, and you know, it's something that he's going to have to fix.
Kevin, we were talking about the San Jose Sharks before you came on, and you know, you look at how they played this year, and they finished 12th in the Western Conference, 89 points. That's only 10-11 points out of a playoff spot. That's 5 wins. To me, you know, I was arguing a little bit here with Drew. Of course, it was politely, as we do in Canada. But, you know, I look at it, and you add, you know, you go out and you get the right goaltender, and you maybe add a defenseman there or a veteran forward. And to me, the San Jose Sharks are one or two moves away from being back in the playoffs. Do you agree with that?
They could be, but they've got to fix some things. And obviously finding a goalie is at the top of the list. Antiniemi, I don't see him coming back, and I think that's probably the right move. But you're going to have to find somebody to play goal. And who they find, it's hard to say right now. Obviously, there were a lot of backups this year that had pretty good years. Maybe a few of those wouldn't be made available. But that's the biggest question mark in terms of position players right now, I think, is goaltender. You know, backup Alex Stalock had a good first year, but he didn't really follow it up last year. His numbers weren't so good either. So maybe there's two new goaltenders here in the fall. But it's something that they're going to have to do as soon as possible. Not as soon as possible, but something they're going to have to look at very quickly here and maybe come July 1st, that's at the top of their list is finding a goalie. But, you know, defensively, too, there's some issues. You know, Brent Burns had a great year offensively, but he was still too much of a liability, I think, for Todd McClellan's liking in his own end for much of the year. Justin Braun is a guy that regressed a little bit from last year. So
did we just drop Kevin? Is that what just happened there? Okay, I think we may have just
Kevin,
lost.
Kevin was in the middle of a great point there, and then all of a sudden, stopped.
Looks like we went those pesky cell phone problems, so we'll get Kevin back on the line momentarily here. Let him continue making his points regarding the Sharks and Pete DeBoer. I'm going to ask him when we come back. There's a little preview. I'm going to ask him about the influence Larry Robinson had, because, of course, Larry Robinson, who is in the San Jose Sharks personnel office, you know, was on Pete DeBoer's staff.
That's right.
In New Jersey back in 2011-2012. We have Kevin again. Kevin, are you back?
Yeah,
you guys got me? Yeah, we got you. Sorry about that. We're not sure what happened
okay,
there.
Yeah, not sure what happened there.
You're in the middle of a good point there, too.
Yeah. You know, but again, there's depth on defense, and there's depth up front issues, too. You know, they have two pretty good top two lines, but they could use a scoring winger or two, and then their third and fourth lines, I think, have to be addressed also.
Kevin Kurz is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the San Jose Sharks insider for CSN Bay Area. And Kevin, we'll have to ask you about the influence that Larry Robinson had on the Sharks' decision to hire Pete DeBoer. Of course, Robinson is in the front office of the San Jose Sharks. He's their director of player development. He was also an assistant on DeBoer's staff in New Jersey in 2011-12. How influential do you think Robinson was in DeBoer getting this job?
Well, if Larry Robinson didn't like Peter DeBoer, he wouldn't be here. I think that's pretty obvious. You know, Larry is really Doug's probably right-hand man, I would say, in the front office at this point. So he clearly played a role. And Doug also, interestingly enough, said that there were a couple other guys. Adam Graves, who was a former player, he knew Peter DeBoer very well. He knows Doug very well, and he talked him up highly. And Doug also said Mike Babcock, of all people, spoke really well of Peter DeBoer when Doug was in Toronto meeting with some candidates for the job. So I think Larry was probably the biggest influence. But, you know, Peter's also a guy that Doug had interviewed 7 years ago when there was a coaching vacancy and they went with McClellan. So Doug was already a little bit familiar with DeBoer himself.
Kevin, you wrote about this recently for CSNBayArea.com. He's still got Peter DeBoer, that is. He's got a name as assistant coaches. Do you know any idea when he's going to make that decision?
It sounds like he's going to really take his time with it. One name that was mentioned in the Edmonton Journal was Dave Barr, who was an assistant in New Jersey with DeBoer, and he also got fired by the Devils in December. But Doug Wilson said not to be surprised if it's a familiar name to Sharks fans that might step behind the bench. Brian Marchment was the name that came up. Mike Ricci, who's a development coach here already. You know, it can probably help, I would think, to bring in an assistant coach that knows the ins and outs of the organization. Maybe someone that's been here a little while and can help help Peter get acclimated to his surroundings a little bit. But you know, Peter also said that he learned from Lou Lamoriello the importance of having a good staff and maybe filling in the holes of what you know, the head coach's weaknesses might be. So that's something that he said he's learned over his time as a head coach, and he's going to take his time, and they're going to make sure they get the right guys in here. So time frame of that, it's hard to say, but you know, I think they're gonna really do their homework on this, is the impression that I got.
Kevin Kurz is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the San Jose Sharks hiring of Pete DeBoer. Kevin's with CSN Bay Area in the San Jose region. Now, Kevin, we saw the infighting become public last year between Joe Thornton and Doug Wilson, and it was really an ugly sort of situation where it spilled out as publicly as it did. You know, is that water under the bridge now, or is, you know, Pete DeBoer going to be a buffer between Wilson and Thornton? You know, how do the Sharks sort of recalibrate themselves after the ugly end to last season?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say what the Thornton-Wilson relationship is right now, but, you know, what we do know is that Doug has already said he's not going to ask Joe or Patrick Marleau to waive his no-trade clause. Neither of those two players want to go anywhere, as far as I can tell. Patrick Marleau even showed up at the press conference the other day as one of the few players that is still in town. So, I don't know that that's all that important. I mean, you know, the GM doesn't really have to be liked in the dressing room. And Doug Wilson basically said as much. He said, my job isn't to be liked. It's to make the right moves and help this team win. So, I do think that by the time the season ended, Joe Thornton and Todd McClellan weren't on the same page. I think some of the comments that were said after the season were kind of reflective of that. And you know, McClellan himself even said that he thought that maybe it was time for a new voice in the Sharks room. So, they parted ways, and I think, I don't think that the board necessarily is going to go in and try to repair any relationships between the team and the front office. He's just there to put his system in place and to try to win games and try to get everyone on the same page in that dressing room, because I think at times last year that was an issue.
Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question. It's about the roster. Brendan Dillon, the Sharks acquired him from Dallas in the course of last season. He's an RFA as of July 1st. Any movement on contract talks with him, or is it expected to be relatively, you know, pain-free to get him back under contract?
Yeah, I know the Sharks want to re-sign him. They definitely want to keep him in the fold. So I haven't heard in terms of any sort of movement there, but they got another guy, Matt Irwin, who is an unrestricted free agent who wasn't very good in the first half of the season, but second half of the season, he was one of their best two or three defensemen. And he's a guy that is going to be more compelling, I think, to me, because he's a guy that could maybe get, a bigger deal on the open market than he would get from San Jose. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. But if they don't re-sign him, that's another hole they have to fill, and obviously defensemen aren't too easy to come by.
No, defensemen and the goaltending hole is a big one we'll have to watch throughout the offseason, of course. Kevin Kurz is the San Jose Sharks insider for CSN Bay Area. Kevin, appreciate your time this morning, and thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, anytime.
Take care, Kevin. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an icy Saturday on TSN 1290. As he always does, Bruce Springsteen brings us into our final segment on a Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Kevin Kurz of CSN Bay Area for joining us to discuss the San Jose Sharks. In case you missed that interview, the interview before that with Mark Seidel, Chief Scout of North American Central Scouting. We also had Lance Pugmire of the LA Times and Andrew Gross of the Record newspaper on the show today. All of those interviews available for download on illegalcurve.com as well as on iTunes. Subscribe to the podcast version. Get it sent to you each and every week. One final segment. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire Ezra for this Saturday morning. Pierre-Carl Pelletier, one of the richest men in Canada and one of the driving forces behind the push to get Quebec City an NHL team, is also the leader of the Parti Québécois Party, which wants to see Quebec separate from Canada. This week, a rival politician said that Pelletier's separatist passions will hurt Quebec City in their quest to get an NHL franchise. Do you think that there is truth to the accusation and that Pelletier's desire to see Quebec leave Canada will hurt Quebec City's attempts to regain an NHL team?
You know, it's obviously a heavily political question,
mm-hmm.
Drew. you know how I feel about Canada. I love Canada. It's my country, and you know, I certainly don't want Quebec to ever separate. I love the people of Quebec, and I think Montreal is one of the nicest cities in the world. It's a question that certainly needs to be asked. And Quebec City's arena, you know, the Memorial Cup is going on at the former Colisée,
yeah,
and that's going to be the last major event to take place at that arena. And I think that hasn't really actually been given enough publicity, in my opinion. I mean, there's a lot of history at that arena,
mm-hmm.
You know, not just the Quebec Nordiques, of course, who called that their home, but you know. A lot has to happen here. And, you know, there's three cities that we certainly think are next in line to get an NHL team: Quebec, Las Vegas, and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is it going to be a relocation or is it going to be an expansion? And Vegas looks like it's the best option to be an expansion. And after that, I mean, it's anyone's guess. Is Arizona going to possibly move to Seattle or Quebec? And as we know, they want two more Western teams, not an Eastern team. But they didn't build that arena in Quebec, you know, just to have the concerts and some of this other stuff. They built that arena hoping that it would help them land an NHL team. So, you know, back to your question, I mean, it's tough to say. You know, I don't know enough about the you know, the political aspect of the decision to grant an NHL team. I can say, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, that I do hope NHL hockey returns to Quebec City, because I live in Winnipeg. As we all do here, we lost our NHL team. It sucked, and we got our NHL team back. They made the playoffs this year, and it's been awesome. So anytime a great city like Quebec can get their NHL team back, again, it's going to be tough because there's now 30 teams, and you know how do they fit in here? But I can't answer the question, Drew, sure, because I don't know the answer, but I do hope they get an NHL team back.
Fair enough. Good job walking around the topic. According to Russian news outlet Championat, Russian player agent Yuri Nikolaev says that Patrick Waugh is interested in signing Alexander Radulov in 2016-17 when his contract in the KHL expires. Patrick Waugh was Radulov's junior coach, so the two men are familiar with one another. Given that Radulov's last NHL stint ended with him being suspended by the Nashville Predators in the midst of a playoff series, how surprised would you be to see Radulov return to the NHL when he has already twice before left the NHL for the KHL?
Wouldn't be surprised at all, because now you're seeing all these guys from the KHL coming back to the NHL. And so we've talked a lot about Alexander Bobrovsky, obviously, and we've talked about Kovalchuk, and you saw Steve Moses sign with the Nashville Predators, and you saw Panarin sign with the Chicago Blackhawks. The KHL is a league that's crumbling quite quickly, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going to exist, but you're seeing teams fold already, and you know we've talked about it with several guests. So I wouldn't be surprised, and it would make sense that he'd go to a team with a coach and, you know, former, obviously, coach and GM in the QMJHL, as you mentioned. So I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, Radulov, certainly you'd hope that he's matured, because the way it ended in Nashville was ugly.
It was ugly, yes, very ugly. After trading Brian Gionta and playing 2014-15 without a captain, Montreal Canadiens legend Guy Lafleur told the Montreal Gazette that Brendan Gallagher should be the next captain of the Habs. Said Lafleur, "A captain shouldn't be chosen on the amount of goals he's going to score. That guy, Gallagher, really impressed me every night I saw him play. He's aggressive. He wants to win. He gets some bad shots from opponents. He takes a lot of hits. And there's not too many guys on the team that work like he does. Do you think Brendan Gallagher is the right choice to be the next captain of the Montreal Canadiens?"
Absolutely. You know how much I like Brendan Gallagher. I've talked about him a lot on this show. Small guy, but you know, he plays with basically, you know, more heart than almost anybody in the NHL. So, you know, especially when Guy Lafleur says that, it says a lot. And it kind of reminds you of Mike Keane, actually, who was the captain of the Montreal Canadiens. Same type of situation, right? You know, he wasn't the most talented player, but he was a guy, you know, had the three Stanley Cups. Heart and soul of the team. So I think, you know, Gallagher would be a great choice.
Earlier this week, Emilio Estevez took to Twitter to voice his support for the Anaheim Ducks. It's no surprise that one-time Mighty Ducks head coach Gordon Bombay would do so. That's, of course, in the movie, The Mighty Ducks. Given that Emilio Estevez cheers for the Ducks, Vince Vaughn cheers for the Blackhawks, Tim Robbins cheers for the New York Rangers, and both Hulk Hogan and Charles Barkley cheer for the Tampa Bay Lightning, which of the NHL's final four teams has the best celebrity fan?
Wow, It's a very good question. Love Mighty Ducks. Adam Banks and all that. I mean, you had Donald Trump in New York yesterday.
Yeah, he doesn't count.
You're fired?
Yeah.
I got to go with Vince Vaughn in Chicago.
Okay, good choice. I appreciate where you're going there.
Love Vince Vaughn.
Final question on Rapid Fire before we go to Cheers and Jeers. The U.S. National Spelling Bee was
held. Can I cut you off for 1 second?
Sure.
Honorable mention to CM Punk.
Yes, he's a
former WWE wrestler, big Hawks fan too.
That's true. Good point. Yep. I forgot about him. The U.S. National Spelling Bee was held earlier this week. Also earlier this week, the Boston Bruins signed Jonas Kemppainen away from Karpat of the Finnish Elite League. Spell his name.
Absolutely not. I'm not even going to try.
Not even going to give it a shot?
Is there a J, a U in there? I don't even.
You don't even want to give it a shot.
What was his name again?
Jonas Kemppainen.
Kemppainen. Can you use it in a sentence?
Yeah. He was signed away from Karpat of the Finnish Elite League.
J-U-N-A-S.
No. Go for the last name.
K-A-M-P-A-I-N-E-N.
Close. Jonas, J-O-O-N-A-S. Kemppainen, K-E-M-P-P-A-I-N-E-N.
There's a reason why I didn't want to try it.
Let's finish it off with Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
As a cheer, Jer.
You know, I didn't have one pre-planned. You know, I know you always get on me here.
We've only been doing it for the last 5 years.
You know, I'll cheer to Pete DeBoer. I think he's a good head coach, and I thought he was, you know, I thought he didn't get the best deal in New Jersey, so it's good that he signed in San Jose. So I'll give Pete DeBoer my cheer.
Fair enough. I'm going to jeer the Boston Bruins. It's actually a good blog post by ESPN and TSN's Pierre LeBrun saying that what they're doing with Claude Julien, not deciding if he's going to come back as their head coach, leaving him twisting in the wind, is really not a good way, not a respectful way to treat a guy who's been a very good head coach for you for a number of years. So I jeer the Boston Bruins and the method in which they're deciding about head coach Claude Julien. New general manager Don Sweeney needs to make a decision on that front. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests, Kevin Kurz, Mark Seidel, Lance Pugmire, and Andrew Gross. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. You can follow us on Twitter, at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website, with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to Corey behind the board. Big thanks to my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. And for both of them, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Blue Jays baseball this afternoon on TSN 1290.